My name is Damon Thomas, and I'd like to welcome you to There Is a Life After Life, poetry and prose on the radio, good words to start the week. We let these words speak for themselves, so let's get started. With Taryn, Love Rains Warwood, Dear America, Ashlyn Schwartz, Yearning, Nicole Zwolinski, Unsung Hero, and Patty the Poetess, Just Be.
Dear America, so what if I resist? Is that reason enough for you to call me a traitor? Or would it be better suited to just say that I am fed up? Tired of taking advantage of the opportunities you said were also for me. Hoping that I would forget. That you never created them for me to have. I've been oppressed by your system before I was even thought of. Thank God the love of my mother has taught me to transcend boundaries and borders and stereotypes and the boxes you attempt to force me in. I am not your puppeted American. I am the long-awaited smile of my ancestors who once looked up towards heaven and saw me. The long stare down a gun barrel, head high with accepted fate, because one day a change will come. I am the one who will stand against the hypocrisy of religion and live by God's real love. But if I do not resist, will I be expected to sign away my freedom just to get a piece of this pie you baked? The one filled with expired ingredients and sour milk, curdled with antiquated values and prehistoric thoughts that have stained the fabric of how this land was truly created. If I do not resist, what am I saying to the lives lost that fought for you? If I do not resist, what do I say to myself knowing that this art was given to me to reflect these times? What story am I leaving behind? Embedded in the contents of a time capsule, what am I saying if I don't continue to fight for your reshaping and continue to cry out for true freedom? So resist, I will, because dear America, I don't want to just be accepted. I just want to live.
Yearning, how do I find happiness again? Not because joy is wrong, but it was meant to include you.
Unsung Hero by Nicole Zwolinski. Motherhood sags like saddlebags strung tightly to her bulging waist and slaps her hips with each step. It split her down the center twice. She stretches her skin, even the bruised flesh, to make the road softer for them. Fingertips to toenails, she reaches to support them across rivers and dreams. Conception to forever, she knows their every detail. As the time lapse speeds, she grasps at the sand, slipping through her hands, and she cracks her heart and lets it spill, knowing she's an unsung hero.
Don't think, just be. But how can it be when racing thoughts take over me and I can't even see 2 feet ahead, blinded by swirling thoughts in my head? Don't think. Just be. No questions asked. Indulging your senses is all you've been tasked. Close your eyes. Feel the air on your skin. Take in soft sounds as you gently breathe in. What do you smell? What do you taste? So much we miss while moving in haste. When our mind starts to race at such an unpleasant pace, because that entertainment we've chased has left us overstimulated, and our intelligent brains have all too quickly assimilated as we consume more in a minute than we're meant to in an hour, under the guise that this gives us power. Don't think! Just be. You won't lose your productivity by allowing sweet serenity for a moment. Just a moment. Cast your whirling thoughts aside. Meet yourself in silence, where your essence need not hide. Don't think, just be. For you deserve a little pause. Don't self-deny, and don't ask why. Breathe your body, just because.
And now, more poetry with Laura Hoffman Kelly, Mindy the Mermaid, Mark Ari, Night Scented Orchids, and Richard Peabody, The Forgiveness Device.
Mindy the Mermaid. On the banks of the Weehee-Watchee, ripe with the smell of brackish water and bowl, she sucks air from a hose, gets water in her eyes, sand in her bras, glitter between her toes, oil-slick noses press against her glass. Life is a tragic aquarium. Tonight, the Little Mermaid wraps her lips around Sailor Jerry, and the world goes on, snatching sequins from her tail.
I ought to sleep, but I'm teasing the memory of smoke and what smoke makes. I thought for a moment it might be mist. Night-scented orchids make such a fool of me.
The forgiveness device. Hold that flashlight still. But I can't. It's impossible. I'm only a child, and I watch as he puffs up bigger and bigger like a barrage balloon, pushing back his glasses that are smeared with grease, as he winds the clicking ratchet again and again, changing spark plugs in the dark. The garage light won't reach outside to where we stand around the burgundy Chrysler. I'm scared, snot dripping down my face, tears. The fender is too big for me to lean over, but I try, and my arm is so numb it tingles. The drop light flickers against the hood. My father is stripping skin off his knuckles as the ratchet slips and dings off the manifold. He's talking to himself, saying he can't see and beginning to cuss. I realize now that he's angry at himself, at his failure to fix something so elementary, and his anger is misdirected at me. But back then I was just a bookish little kid, afraid of failing. I didn't know yet that it's okay to fail, that my father was just trying to save a buck and afraid of aging. The price was high. Why can't you wait till morning, I wanted to say, but didn't dare. He drinks another Ballantine, crumples the can, and drops it on the driveway. If I could, I'd materialize at that exact moment, the aluminum still rattling against the concrete. Tell him, it's not that important, Dad. It's just a couple of spark plugs. Don't get so stressed. I'd rub my red bandana across his forehead and soothe his brow. Tell him, relax, and watch his features soften. Hear that laughter again. And I'd forgive him. I really would.
I read a great many comic books growing up, and was always entertained, but at what cost? Without an imperfection. Here, on There's a Life After Life. Charles Atlas promised big, useful muscles in just 7 days. Advertisements for the Charles Atlas Dynamic Tension Exercise Program filled the comic books of my youth. They claimed your friends would take notice as you physically assaulted bullies and easily won carnival games. These scenarios always ended with a chanting crowd, "What a man!" This rapid transition away from frustrated adolescence began with ordering a free Charles Atlas booklet. I never ordered this booklet. Even at the age of 11, I was pretty sure I couldn't afford a system that promoted public violence and the inexplicable mastery of rigged carnival games. A system that made you a man. My journey towards this narrowly defined manhood began with a Saturday trip to the flea market in Chiefland, Florida. There, in a water-damaged cardboard box under a plywood top table, I found the complete Charles Atlas course. The course materials were stained and showed signs of clumsy repair. Some of the blots marking the yellowed, tape-covered pages appeared to be bloodstains. I excitedly read through these lessons on the 20-minute trip home and began the dynamic tension training program that night. The goal was to train, not strain, as the exercises were practiced twice daily. The foundational exercise was a push-up variation called the Atlas Dip. Each hand was placed on the seat of a chair while the feet remained on the floor. We were asked to do as many Atlas Dips as we could without straining. There was no specific number provided as a target goal, but we were told Charles Atlas did 200 repetitions of this exercise daily. From here, the course became more esoteric, recommending that we bathe the sexual organs with very cold water. This was followed by the all-caps admonition, "Do not neglect it." In just 7 days, I injured myself and was in severe pain. I skipped my weekly flea market trip, and even reading comics was now uncomfortable. It seemed at the time that only some failing on my part could have led to me not receiving the full benefits of the Charles Atlas program. I believed that I was atypical in needing more than the stated 7 days to build those big, useful muscles. For weeks, I worked to follow a seemingly random program that devoted a chapter to constipation and recommended massaging the scalp with olive oil. This ended with lesson 8. I collapsed in an exhausted heap while suffering through the 13 exercises targeting the shoulders, thighs, and legs. It was then that I realized Charles Atlas was my bully. When I was 8 years old, I had my tonsils removed. This was said to be needed to help with head congestion that created intermittent hearing issues. After the procedure, I coughed up blood and slowly came to realize my throat was too sore for any of the previously promised ice cream. This recovery period was the beginning of my enduring interest in comic books. My painful, bloody whispers were quieted as my grandpa brought me a copy of Who's Who in the DC Universe, Volume 1. Described as a definitive directory, this first 32-page issue covered from Abel, the biblical brother of Cain, to Auron. Batman and Superman were household names, but it was this book that introduced me to the wider world of comics. This was important since I needed other options. The lightly supervised free play of the early 1980s had every boy I knew choosing to identify with someone like Superman to combat evil. The result was a daily battle where Superman fought everyone else who was usually also Superman. Originality was not required to be pretend heroic. All others in the same physical space could only be evildoers, and were punched in the head as a corrective measure. Receiving that first Who's Who in the DC Universe started my search for a superhero that didn't exist simply to punch others. I wanted to find someone who had a more relatable motivations. In my case, that relatable superhero was the Silver Surfer. The Silver Surfer left his home planet of Xin-La and explored the universe while working for a powerful figure called Galactus. After later being confined to Earth as punishment, the Silver Surfer was once more free to fly the universe. With Silver Surfer, Volume 3, Issue 1. I began to read those books with Volume 3 and saw myself in a silver figure who primarily desired to explore and learn. I wanted to break free of my small hometown and soar, just as the Silver Surfer had escaped his confinement on Earth and headed to the stars. Extra household chores were needed to earn the 75 cents for each issue, but it was a small price to pay for cosmic reassurance that my own dreams could come true. With Volume 3, Issue 11 of Silver Surfer, the cover price increased from 75 cents to $1. Not having that extra quarter meant the issue remained on the rusty rotating rack as I left Cheek's drugstore empty-handed. Dreams of exploring new places now required an additional 25 cents. Silver Surfer Volume 3, Issue 10, concludes with repetitions of the phrase, "No idea descends into manifestation without an imperfection." This Sartian reality defined the last issue of the series I would be able to purchase. With no new material available, I frequently reread this 10th issue. It was with these repeated readings that I developed a different perspective of the Charles Atlas ads. They inserted reminders of bullies and social pressures into our escapism. Charles Atlas then offered to sell you chilled sexual organs, oiled hair, and bloody knuckles as a solution to not yet being an adult. There isn't much we fully control at the age of 11. Comics provided me brief moments of escapism until a lack of funds made this small solace inaccessible. 6 years later, I was able to leave that small hometown in Dixie County, Florida. I have since traveled to places that would have been as fantastic to my 11-year-old self as anything the Silver Surfer could discover in a remote galaxy. All of this just took much longer than the 7 days Charles Atlas promised. And now we close out our show with Liz Robbins, Drive-In Church, and Ron Whitehead, I Will Not Bow Down.
Drive-In Church. My mother wakes early every Sunday, pulls on black hose even in June, and drives 40 minutes to put on a choir robe and sing in a crowd for a crowd. Such is the nature of her faith. Mine was held for too many years, thrashing underwater, burbling, silent screaming for air. My faith may be, however, growing toward that church in Daytona Beach, where you don't even have to get out your car, and therefore your pajamas. Just tool right up with your cigs on the dash and a 12-pack of Krispy Kremes, reggae on the tape deck, where you can snooze mid-sermon, curl up with a blanket and nobody would see. With only your license plate showing, you'd still get credit for going. That's what I mean. It's all about the Redeemer card for me, where 999 church visits means a trip to heaven is free. My mother says, it's not for God you go, for you. But I'm still that teen in black eyeliner and dress, scowling in the back pew, stinking of last night's beer, wondering what's in it for me. Which doesn't add up if my mother's to be believed. Here's what I think. One day I'll die, and maybe it will be true. My mother wearing wings, drinking martinis, laughing in the golden sun behind a big locked gate. And I'll be staring in, feeling sorry and alone, yet knowing I'm exactly where I'm meant to be. And my mother says, how is that unlike now and how you felt your whole life? Maybe if you'd go to church, you'd feel different. And I say, doesn't someone have to be the crazy, the heathen? What if everyone went to church? She sighs, oh, if I know God, he'd just find another way to up the ante. To which I think, the next time I go looking in the paper for drive-in times, it'll be to see what film's playing. But she knows I'm listening.
I will not bow down. I will not bow down, America. I will not bow down to your government, to your religion. I will not bow down, America, to your materialism, to your international corporations, to your religious shrines, your stock markets, your shopping malls. I will not bow down, America, to your coal mines, to your power plants. I will not go crawling down the deep shafts at midnight. I will not bow down, America, to your invasion of privacy, to your moral absolutes, your religious political might. I will not bow down, America, to your assassins, the CIA, the FBI, the corporate police state, your killing, murdering machines. I will not bow down, America, to your bureaucracies, to your schools, to your attempt to make me the model citizen of your state, of your church. I will not bow down, America, to your history of lies, to your secrets in the best interest of to protect the people. America, I pledge allegiance to those who were here before you, to those who will be here after you are gone. America, I pledge allegiance to the woman I love and to our children. I pledge allegiance to my friends and allies, my guides and angels, both seen and unseen. America, I pledge allegiance to poetry, to music, to art, to the literary renaissance, to the global literary community. I pledge allegiance to the beat, to the outsider. I pledge allegiance to meditation, to stillness, to magic, to beautiful mysticism, to ecstasy, to ah and aha, to the Big Bang epiphany, to altered states of consciousness. I pledge allegiance to seeing into the occult, the unknown, to seeing into every day, into the ordinary, and being amazed. I pledge allegiance to the sacred and the profane, to Gnostical turpitude. I pledge allegiance to my physical body and to the knowledge that I am more than my physical body. I pledge allegiance to seeing more than the physical world and to those of higher frequency vibration and consciousness. I pledge allegiance to passing through the sacred fire, to entering the upper chamber of the Golden Pyramid, to levitating over the open sarcophagus, to out-of-body experience. I pledge allegiance to the hottest sex and to gentle affection. I pledge allegiance to fractal geometry, the geometry of clouds and coastlines, to 2 times 2 equaling 5. I pledge allegiance to failure, to failing as no other dare fail. I pledge allegiance to taking risk, to holy daring, to na myoho renge kyo, to accepting responsibility for my own actions. I pledge allegiance to not achieving the American dream of success, America. I pledge allegiance to trees, to green grass, to brown earth, to wildflowers of every color, to wilderness, to turquoise Native American skies, to rivers, lakes, and seas, to healing the earth. I pledge allegiance to the Holy Spirit, to the Word, and to silence. I pledge allegiance to dreams, to birth, to the journey, and to death. I pledge allegiance to candor, to sincerity, to laughter, to irony, to passion, to compassion, to empathy, and to helping those in need. I pledge allegiance to resurrection of the heart. No, America, I will not bow down.
My great-grandmother died almost 20 years before I was born, hit by a train near Branford, Florida. A very Southern Gothic way to go. I grew up with her stories. Pinches of snuff filled her mouth. Pinches left bruises on your arm. She was a witch. The black snakes crawled as she whistled. There were nail-covered photos on the side of her barn, songs to the cypress trees. Her daughter shared these things, all told with affection, enthusiasm, awe. There is a life after life for those who are a good story. I'd like to thank you all for joining me here today with good words to start the week. If you'd like to hear your own poetry, prose, spoken word here, get in touch at ruralgloom.com. That's ruralgloom.com. If you'd like to support poetry, spoken word, story here on WGOT, just head to wgot.org and donate. Thank you.